The embers rise and sway. Ancient voices ride the smoke, bearing wisdom from far away.
In the crackle of the hearthstone, in the root spit of the pine, every story leaves a footprint, every question leaves a sign.
From the roots beneath our feet to the stars beyond our sight, we gather where the old paths meet and kindle sparks against the night. Ashen ether, hand in hand, hearth and heaven, sea and land, ancient voices, old as weather, meet where
among the silent starlight, where the hidden paths are revealed.
From the embers of the ancestors to the dreams yet still unborn, every ending feeds the future, every dusk prepares the dawn. Ashen ether, share our stories. Under stars we seek our way, holding fast to memory's lantern while we greet a brand new day. For the road is never ending and the wheel is always turning, yet the smallest ember
drugs, you stink. You broke the code, now feel the sting. Captain's orders clear, no room for fear. Walk the plank, walk the plank. High above the clouds of gray. Walk the plank, walk the plank. Traitors pay today. Gears are turning, engines are all fired up. No escape, your time is up. Captain's orders clear, no room for fear. Walk the plank, walk the plank. High above the clouds so gray. Walk the plank, walk the plank. Traitors pay today. Dogs, you stink, you broke the code, now feel the sting. Captain's orders clear, no room for fear. Walk the plank, walk the plank. High above the clouds so gray. Walk the plank, walk the plank. Traitors pay today.
Flying flag and never fall.
for sales and trim the lines. We don't take the coward's sides. From for sake, the moon won't wait for fools who cross the cruise on faith. One step, two step, plank beneath. Feel the salt wind, steal your teeth. Or take the keel. Feel the rope of the sunburned peel. Maroon dark sands where no one calls. The sea she takes, she gives, she brawls. Oh, the sea she takes, she gives, she brawls. The captain's grin, a jagged smile. His words could cut a cannon's bile. Crew all cheer, they clap, they sing for justice served and ropes that swing. No blindfolds here, no final wish, just the kiss of brine and fish. Walk the plank or take the keel, feel the rope of the sunburn peel. She brawls. Oh, see, she takes, she gives, she brawls.
Flash bird screech as his wings of flame. Unconscious Wolf, the keeper's name. Ancient tongue scream, forgotten lore, echoes of wars behind closed doors. Unveil the lies, tear through the veils, a hidden past, a thunderous tale. Flash Academy, rise alert, truth ignites, the pages burn. Wings of fire, salt the pain, hidden history breaks the chain. Ever sharp as blades of steel, Flash Bird strikes through the seal. Non-kosher salt, his gaze like frost. He guards the truth, no matter the cost. Through endless halls, the whispers call aloud. The secrets to end them all. Flash Academy, rise alert. Truth ignites, the pages burn.
Below. behind stone walls, coiled deep where shadows stay. The serpent guards the flow away. Fields crack under silent weight, breath held in the hands of fate. No wind moves, no thunder calls, only silence over all. But high above the sky.
Thank you. steps alone in the silence of the sea. A mother grieves eternally.
So grand, boots took a time like a jazz band. Her voice cut sharp like a saxophone sting. On kosher soul, the queen of swing. Morning haze, don't meet her glare. She'll sink your ship with a single stare. But the crew, they cheer, they know her role. She's the sassiest captain with a briny soul. Non-kosher soul, the spice of the sea. The captain of chaos, the extra queen bee. Beloved and feared, she's the one we adore. But don't cross her path till she's brewed one more. The salty bit flies high through the mist. Her oar is barked like a clarinet. With steam from the engine, steam from her cup. Without her coffee, don't dare interrupt. She's a whirlwind of charge, a tempest of whip. Her laugh's a trumpet, her flare's a stair hit. When she dances, the deck becomes alive. The ship and the swing keep the crew in jive. When the beams start to brew, she's a whole different hue. From storm to sunshine in a sip or two. She'll sink your ship with a single stare. But the crew, they cheer, they know her role. She's the sassiest captain with a briny soul. Non-kosher soul, the spice of the sea. The captain of chaos, the airship queen bee. Beloved and feared, she's the one we adore. But don't cross her path till she's brewed one more. Non-kosher soul, the spice of the sea. The captain of chaos. Salty bitch flies high through the mist. Her order sparked like a clarinet twist. Steam from the engine, steam from her cup. Without her coffee, don't dare interrupt. She's a whirlwind of charm, a tempest of wit. Her laugh's a trumpet. Her laugh's a trumpet. Her laugh's a trumpet. Her laugh's a trumpet. For she's a whirlwind of charm, a tempest of wit. Her laugh's a trumpet, her glare's a snare hit. When she dances, the deck becomes alive. The ship and the swing keep the crew in jive. When the beams start to brew, she's a whole different hue. From storm to sunshine in a sip or two. Non-kosher soul, the spice of the sea. The captain of chaos, the airship queen bee. Beloved and feared, she's the one we adore. But don't cross her path till she's brewed one more. When the beams start to brew, she's a whole different hue. From storm to sunshine in a sip or two.
Got sails of silk and a belly of brass, cutting through clouds like a blade through glass. A cruise, a mad lot with a laugh and a snarl. The boots tap the deck to a rhythm bizarre. The wind sings low, the cannons hum. The salty bitch where trouble comes. Oh, the salty bitch, she flies so high, stealing stars from the midnight sky. With a yo-ho-ho and a hearty grin, she'll rob your heart as the dance begins. Spins wild in the captain's hands, a compass down, she's got her own plans. Through lightning cracks and the storm's wild kiss, no ship's as daring as a salty bitch. The wind sings low, the cannons hum, the salty bitch where trouble comes. Oh, the salty bitch, she flies so high, stealing stars from the midnight sky. With a yo-ho-ho and a hearty grin, she'll rob your heart as the dance begins. We'll be right back.
ships as daring as a salty bitch. The wind sings low, the cannons hum. The salty bitch where trouble comes. Oh, the salty bitch, you fly so high, stealing stars from the midnight sky. With a yo-ho-ho and a hearty grin, she'll rob your heart as the dance begins.
All right, we made it, woo! And I only had one whoopsie so far, and it was just a hot mic, so it's not even a real whoopsie, which is good for me, especially. Ladies' night, I love this. This has, like, fast become one of my absolute favorites, so I say that about every show. Because it's all cool, so this is awesome having all the ladies together again. We don't shame our fellow white women, unless they're mud sharks, but we should all try to convince bitch of Buchenwald to come on sometime. Maybe next month. Huh? Huh? We're talking about that over in the 88 chat. So, all right. So tonight, so we have Huntress. We have Fashbird, of course, Monica and Kathleen. This is fantastic. Let's say hi to our chats first, and then we'll get to chatting. Over on 88 so far, we have Bitch of Buchenwald, Joseph D. Kermy, Red 88, Sons of Liberty Rising, Totem Cop 33, and Shlomo's. Did I say Sons of Liberty? I said Sons of Liberty. I called your name. I did. So far, I think the only person on the BitChute stream is Joseph D. Hi, Joseph. He's everywhere tonight. He's pretty much on all the chats. Anybody listening on Crewbot, good to have you guys listening in. And over here on FTJ, we've got Joseph, Thomas E. Dwyer, Miss Hitler, Spy Hunter, and Kermy. I feel like, oh, Thomas Dwyer. It's so weird. Sometimes people don't show up on the side scroll, but they are there. There was someone else in here. Bertrand was in here. That's who I'm missing. I know Aquarius Fab LLC showed up. Red Fred. Okay, I think I got everybody. If not, I'll catch you on the outro. So how is everybody doing tonight?
I'm great. Doing okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't see Kathleen, but it's like she's invisible. I see Kathleen. Her name.
I can see you, Monica, and Fashberg, and Huntress, and Salty.
Do others see her?
Yep. We see her.
Oh. Maybe I'll refresh my screen.
Okay.
Hope I don't disappear.
Hey, Salty, could you possibly share the link for the BitChute? I can't find it on BitChute.
Yes. Give me one.
I see her name there, you know, like I see the name and I don't know. Kathleen, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know if Monica can.
I can't. Oh, I know. Okay. Try that again.
Can you hear me now?
No.
Connecting.
That is so odd.
I put that in the FTJ. I'll put that in both chats in case anyone else is having trouble.
Thank you.
Yep. Maybe somebody else should talk, and I can hear you, Salty, okay. But I haven't heard anybody else so far.
Huh. That is very strange. Nobody else is muted.
Can Huntress. Somebody?
Huntress, we have. Can you hear? Because I don't think we're hearing Huntress either.
No. So I can hear everyone but Huntress. I heard you, Fashberg.
I can see that Kathleen is trying to talk because a yellow box comes around, but the only thing I see there is the background that you got, like the tavern. The tavern background,
right,
she's
Kathleen.
Invisible, but, you know, and then the little name
like
tag is there.
Coming.
That's it.
Yeah.
I hear nothing. Only you, Salty.
How are you doing?
Now Fashbird, she was talking a moment ago. I could see because the ring goes like this, but I don't hear anything.
Okay, Spy's going to go check on Huntress because I don't think her mic is hooked in or something. We're not hearing her either way.
Maybe so. ask Monica to disconnect and then reconnect her ear apparatus.
Yeah. Have you tried unplugging your headphones and plugging them back in?
I just did that. I'm okay. Hearing you.
You can hear me. You can hear Fash. Okay.
No, I couldn't hear Fash.
You couldn't hear Fash. You're only hearing me.
So I am going to leave and I'm going to come back and just see if it looks
all
different.
Right.
I'll refresh.
All righty. Well, in the meantime, I think everybody can hear everybody else.
Yes.
So How are you ladies doing? Kathleen, what's up?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. What's up? Not a whole lot and not too much. Okay, you can hear Monica.
Yes.
All right.
I can see you too. I couldn't see you before. Only the tavern.
Okay, well, here I am. Good to see you. You look good in that color.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I don't have any thoughts going through my head. Maybe pass by me, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So life is good.
Good. Fashbird, how about you? Got anything going on?
No. Still got a little bit of a head full, but no, I was actually looking forward to today.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we got you.
You got me. The internet plumber fixed it.
All hail the hunter.
Yeah. And speaking of plumbing, I fixed a plumbing issue yesterday.
Nice.
If I could just share my success. Yeah. I had a drip under my sink in a valve, and the drip became greater with each passing month, and so did the size of the bowl under the sink, until finally when I tried to repair it, it started spurting out water when the water was turned back on. So yesterday a good friend of mine gave me two bar clamps,
hose clamps.
They're a clamp to work on plumbing. You use one to hold the part still and the other to turn the part. And I was successful at my work, and I put the new part on, and I have no more leak. So I didn't have any larger bowls, so I had to take it upon myself.
There's some noise there coming, I think, from Huntress. You might want to mute when you're...
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's probably my air conditioner I just turned on.
Speaking of plumbing, so...
Cool.
Yeah, since you can hear me, okay, plumbing has just been a huge issue in my life the last 3 weeks. It finally required a jackhammer to dig up part of our old clay sewer pipe that was broken, but it's fixed now. And as I keep saying, who would have imagined we would have plumbing problems in a 200-year-old house? It's just a shock.
Oh, I feel you there. We had to pretty much rip out everything in ours and redo it.
So mm-hmm.
I feel your pain. Although I have a feeling our house is quite a bit smaller than yours, which was nice.
Yeah. I can't remember where I... Oh, there it is. Okay. I will mute myself other people...
Uh-oh.
Well, she just removed herself instead of muting.
I'm sure she will pop right back in. Well, in the meantime, Monica, how are things going up in the Great White North?
The Great White North is greening. It is very green now.
Nice.
And it's been a busy time gardening, getting the garden in and weeding like crazy and mowing a lawn and... just springtime things, and now it's getting to be summertime things, and lots of music happening in my life, and life is good.
Nice.
In spite of everything around us, you know, like, it's like, it's unbelievable all the things going on in the world. It's like accelerating ever so much, and but yet somehow we manage to enjoy ourselves, enjoy life, and I figure that every day that we are doing that, we are winning.
Yes. Cumulative little victories.
Right on, right on. And that is exactly what we have to do. My mind, when you asked me, Salty, immediately went to the outer narrative, to that world narrative. And I forgot to mention exactly what you're talking about, Monica. So thank you. It helps pull me back into reality, into my life.
Oh, man. So I forget if it was Kathleen or Monica, who first sent the email about Mildred Giller's Access Sally. But that was awesome. And Fash and I ended up doing Fash Academy last night. We went over a whole handful of the biggest, or I should say the most recognizable broadcasters from World War II. So who was it, Fash? There was Lord Haw Haw, Tokyo Rose, of course, Access Sally. I forget who else.
Henriette from France. There was Lord Hee Haw. There was the Jew Delmer. I think that's what we got through.
Yeah.
So far.
But it was neat to be able to go over that kind of as a precursor tonight, because we kind of wanted to reference Mildred. You guys that were in last night's show are going to remember her a little bit more as Access Sally. Which, well, Fash, you found out there were a couple that were referred to as Access Sally, but one was the Italian gal, right?
Yes. Okay. Zuka. When people usually said Access Sally, though, most people thought of Mildred, not of the other woman.
And yeah, it was just so fascinating to learn more. Like, I think I'd heard the name. I had never really researched her. So it was so neat to be able to read the interview transcript that you guys had shared in the email and learn a little bit about her. And it was just so unique. We were talking about last night how one thing that stood out the most to me was here was a woman who was deeply patriotic in the truest sense. Like, she didn't give up her American citizenship when she went over and did this, because she didn't hate her country. She hated her government and what it was doing. And I just think, I feel like that took, especially as a woman, a lot of courage to do. You know, I don't know what anyone else's thoughts are on that particular aspect of the story. Do we want to go round circle, or do we want to do Black-a-mole style?
She was imprisoned. Uh-huh. And she was supposed to go to jail for actually longer than she ended up in jail for. I think somebody, whoever the president was, pardoned her after 12 years. Who was it that pardoned her? You've done more recent research, maybe?
That was Ford, right?
I believe so, yeah. I'm just pulling it up now.
I didn't know that she was imprisoned.
Oh, yeah, she was in prison for 12 years.
Well, that's like Ezra Pound. He was in, 13 years. I mean, for speaking out, and he didn't give up his American citizenship either. He was totally loyal to his country, and he wanted to express and explain, just like Mildred did, what was going on with, you know, the communist, Marxist, Bolshevik revolution. And she wanted to alert people. He wanted to alert people so that they could vote out Roosevelt, vote out all of these communist, treasonous traitors. And instead, they were thrown in the gulag.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that she had been too. And of course, that's their trick. That's their tool, right?
She was actually the first woman ever to be convicted of treason.
And what was her original sentence? I think 40 years.
Was that supposed to be up to 20 years? She did 12.
Yeah.
She did 12 years and then got a $10,000 fine on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, then that was a huge amount of money.
Huge. Oh, yeah. And how was she going to get that money while she was in prison? I mean, this is crazy. Right.
Well, I want to bring up a point which brings us to today's war, a supposed war by Milikowski and Drumpf against Iran, and here we have all these retired CIA agents for the U.S. and we have these retired military colonels and all of these people speaking with various Iranian news media people, and they are talking against the United States. They're exposing what Drumpf is doing and what the U.S. is doing and his whole cabinet. And I'm sitting there listening, and I'm going, well, are these men all going to be thrown in prison because they're speaking against the government of the United States? I mean, won't it be interesting after, you know, however long Drumpf decides he's going to take this war, so-called war, forward. I mean, are they going to be considered traitors, just like Mildred and Ezra and all the other Americans who were speaking truth about what was happening. I mean, it just boggles my mind.
Well, I think former presidents pretty much get complete immunity. Functionally, if not officially. That's the messed up part.
Like, yeah.
So, no. He's too well protected. There's no way someone could be as... Like, everyone picked on Biden, and don't get me wrong, Biden was obviously not of sound mind, but the absolute sheer buffoonery of Trump, and he gets away with it every time, because he's so hand in glove with the kikes. Like, his one son literally just married the daughter of Epstein's personal banker.
And he didn't go to the wedding. A tight family.
Yeah.
But I don't mean to pull away from Mildred. It's just that here we have Mildred and Ezra Pound, two examples who were tortured and imprisoned for very long periods of time for speaking truth. And they never gave up their citizenship, their patriotism toward their countries. And yet we have people today that we know are going to be, you know, sailing through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's messed up. It's interesting. Yeah. The courage that Mildred had to do this just kind of grabs me, honestly.
She was a very classy woman, a very graceful. The way she spoke, it was just, you know, she caught your attention, but mm-hmm. she spoke the truth.
Yeah.
I was able to find one of her broadcasts on YouTube, and she definitely spoke her mind. She was speaking to the women, and she made a good point. You love your children, but if your child does something wrong, you're going to fix that so that they become a better citizen. Yeah, if your country does something wrong, you still love your country, but mm-hmm. you're not going to back up what they're doing wrong. You need to fix that. You know, I think she made a very good point, and it was most people should understand or would be able to understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that she was certainly on par with all of the other people that we respect a great deal who speak about the Third Reich and the truth. And what struck me is the Ernst Zundel prophecy is somewhat similar to what she said. She, you know, that interview was what in the 80s? She was an old lady. She died in 88. But yet she was still like hopeful. She was upbeat. And what was it she said that really struck me? It was here. Hitler made Germany into a beacon of light for the whole world to follow into a better way of life. I personally believe Germany died a horrible death, much like Christ, to herald in a new age of light and harmony for all. In time, evil ones will be destroyed who have caused so much misery, hatred, and death on this earth. It is prophesied. NS Germany was a glimpse of the world after this new age comes. And don't you feel it? I do. I feel it coming.
I do.
It's, yeah. And also she was definitely very Christian. She makes Christian references very often. And she is correct that it is similar to Jesus, who was killed horribly. And then Christianity didn't really take off right after that. You know, there was Paul in the 40s, but it wasn't really until after the fall of Jerusalem that people started going, oh, wow, this guy was right. He foretold the destruction of Jerusalem. And that's when people really started flocking to Christianity. So there is this lag period between a great man like Hitler and people recognizing he's a great man, especially when Jews are involved, when they are the ones running the propaganda. The truth is covered up for a long time. but they always lose. People look at Jews as really, really powerful. I see them as the greatest losers in history. Yes. They're always a flash in the pan. They will gain power in a country, but as soon as they do, it's like the end of that country, and people learn the lesson, and then they forget.
Well, I feel like they always push too hard, too far, too fast, and they get way too big for their britches, quite honestly, and kind of expose themselves, unfortunately, not just metaphorically. Had to slide that one in. It is apparently like Fag Appreciation Month.
Oh, wow.
As of yesterday. It's funny, Arian Eagle was saying, nope, we're taking it back. This is now officially White Pride Month. I'm like, okay, I'm there for that.
Right on.
But yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Huntress. They can't create. That's the thing. They can only corrupt and steal, you know, and that's why I think the propaganda aspect is one of our biggest battlefields right now. So I don't know what everyone's thoughts are there. Do you guys feel like propaganda should still be the main focus? We need to ramp up our efforts regarding propaganda, counter their narrative even harder.
Yeah, and make sure that we clarify propaganda in its original sense does not mean, it doesn't have a judgment on the message. It just means you put your message out there. But unfortunately, that word has taken on very negative meaning. Mm-hmm. So it's important to clarify that often if we're going to use that word, because most people hear that word and they just think propaganda equals lies.
Oh, I like to counter that with the stop smoking programs, the propaganda to stop smoking. I always say, well, that's not negative, right? So there could be positive propaganda, there could be negative propaganda.
Very
but
good.
Back under Hitler, though, I don't think it really was used as in a negative connotation.
You're right. But nowadays.
Yeah.
But that's a very good counter that you suggested. The propaganda that was put out to stop smoking or lots of things like that. But you're right. Back to your original point, Salty, that it is a war of ideas. It is a war for our minds and our souls. And I mean, it's a satanic attack on everything that our people have created. And it is a satanic attack on God. So, I mean, that is actually, you know, the representatives of Satan, that they are the ones who call themselves Jews today. And they're out to destroy everything good.
Yeah.
You know, how did this come about? I don't know, but it's been happening for thousands of years. And these people like Mildred Gillers, there have always been people at every stage in history that tried to warn, that understood it, who could see it at every stage. Right now we're doing it, right?
Well, I guess technically, yes.
I think it's really important because, you know, they say that the first victim of war is the truth.
Yeah.
But if we keep the ball in our court and we keep providing truth and information and here's the books and here's this or here's that, we keep that in our court, that gives us definitely a leg up in the game.
That's why your work is so important. You're, you know, archiving tremendous amount of truth and history as
it
was from the words of the people themselves at the time and current and past, everything. So, yeah, kudos. You should tell the audience where you do that, your Substack, just while we're on that.
Oh, everyone's links are below the video.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I got you guys.
Very good. And to go back to what you were talking about just a moment ago, Monica, you know, I want to say thank you, Salty, for bringing this kind of forum together, because this is really, it's education. And we have been sorely dumbed down with an intention to take us away from the truth and take us away from our curiosity and take us away from our learning. And so, you know, and what better way than to attack our language? I mean, anyone who is put under the spell of a master, their language is always stolen from them. And what the Jew is doing here is they're taking our language and they are changing the meanings of words. They're inverting them. So even like the conversation about propaganda, it's really important to bring us back to what the actual meaning of it is, not the inverted use of the word. I've been putting together a list of words that I'm finding being used by corporations today. You know, there's even one about these ticks called the alpha gal, and it's along the same line as the e-girl. Right? I mean, why would they call it an alpha gal when they know about e-girls, right? So, but that is all part of it. And then corporations are using words like edge operators and powered land and powered shelves and vertically integrated resources and forward-looking statement. I mean, these words, forward-looking statement was used multiple times as I was looking into data centers. Forward-looking statement. And they were referring to it as if we knew what they meant by it. And again, I go back to that beautiful poem that you recited last week by Lewis Carroll, and how Lewis Carroll would use words without defining them and take us along on this journey without any definition and a completely different meaning that he put to that word. Some of them were gibberish, but some of them were words that we know. And that's the Jew technique. And that's the way to confuse our minds. That's the way to numb us into not listening. And so here we are in this opportunity with you to bring us back to the actual meaning of a word so that we know what we're talking about and so that we can basically undo the spell by the Jew, at least with the language. So critical.
But I really need to know, what is an alpha gal?
I was just wondering that myself. Is that
I've
like
never the, heard that.
An is alpha that the gal. Newest? An alpha gal is the new tip that is being dispersed aerially in southern United States because they have modified it in a lab so that if it is on you or bites you, doesn't even have to bite you, it can inject a particular gene that will create an adverse reaction to red meat so that you develop an allergy to red meat.
Oh, the Lone Star tick. I think I've heard it called Lone Star tick.
So whether or not any of that is true, or if it is just to make us fearful so that we then react to that shock, you know, it's probably not even true. But they've called it alpha gal, and that's, you know, and that to me is too close to e-girl.
I think that Kathleen really hit on something important, is that it is time for us to step up our game because there are big people, you know, people, former government people and former media people who are now sounding an awful lot like us. And we need to help them and also correct them because they will go soft on some things. Mm-hmm. And that we are well aware of the truth in those matters. So, yeah, we're like on the money. The time is ripe to really make the prophecies come true.
And it's not time to rest on our laurels and go, hey, we're making strides. No, don't relax.
Exactly.
Time to amp up our game.
Yeah.
So, like, it raises, you know, all of this raises the really good question of, okay, so how are we going to define propaganda? I personally see it like there's minimum at least two aspects that we need to really pay closely attention to. Of course, there is the propaganda that sharing the actual truth, the actual history, never letting anyone forget that, no, it was like 271K max, period. It wasn't Zyklon B. It was Typhon. All the facts that we all know we need to keep pushing with the truth. One thing that I really would love to see more of is the propaganda, proper form of propaganda being aimed to our own people, basically what we call white pilling, and sharing more of the day-to-day, the little victories that we were talking about when we first got on. And that, I know it always gives me such a boost. So like hearing Kathleen like, yeah, I fixed my faucet. That was fantastic. I love hearing that. It's just those little everyday victories. I think if we are able to share them more across the community as a form of positive propaganda, that could have a very good effect to help us keep our momentum. What are your guys' thoughts?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Monica.
Yeah, bang on. The importance of sharing or talking up or reminding people or telling people what our culture is really about, or who our ancestors really were and the great achievements of our ancestors, whether that be in the form of what they built, you know, architecture wise, or just civilization wise, or the culture, the dances, the music, all these things. Like, there, I mean, if people are only getting the one story that, oh, we're guilty of this and guilty of that, like what they would learn in social studies class in school, that, you know, I saw the curriculum that my friend showed me of her high school son's social studies class, the two-page outline of the curriculum at the beginning of the year. And I said to her, gee, if every single white child in that class, which at that time it was still the majority, I do believe, if every single white child doesn't commit suicide by the end of the year, I'd be surprised. Like, it was just all, everything bad. And of course, lies. Lies, lies, lies. Oh, colonialism, slavery, and Holocaust, and more of that. And we're so oppressive, and we're so racist, and we're so bigoted, and, you know, all this crap. So why aren't they teaching about European history in that social studies class to the kids? So it is really important for us not just to dispel the lies and, you know, correct people on their faulty understanding of history, but it is equally important to be, you know, proud of our culture, proud of our ancestors, and impart that message to people and live it as well. Live that. So, yeah, bang on for what you just said.
Yeah. Well, Spy Hunter and I are having victories every day in what we call IRL private. And that is, we don't do like, you know, public protesting or any crap like that. But if you come to our house, you're pretty, you'd have to be really blind to not recognize that we're both, we're Dixie Nazis, right? We love Hitler and Robert E. Lee, right?
Nice.
So, and we have a lot of people coming through our house. One, because we're doing a lot of construction, and also because people want to see our house. And we're getting extremely positive responses. People, some are like really just curious, and then they're going home and they're bringing their other friends to meet us and their kids and everything. It's like I said, I think the time is really ripe. You know, probably 10 years ago, the response would have been different. Probably even just 5 years ago, when they were tearing down the statues and here and stuff, people would be like, ah, just shut up, you know. But now they're not happy about this stupid Iran situation. They don't like the high gas prices. I mean, these sorts of things are what affects the normie, that because they don't pay attention to the news most of the time, unless they're boomers and glued to Fox News, you know. But it's just the Jews have pushed too far to the point where, you know, there people are receptive to listening to us. And so, yeah, I'm very, very positive. It's maybe too little too late. We're probably going to go through a lot of pain, but there is a sea change about.
I got a visual of Huntress, and she invites someone in, and she points to her art and her tapestry on her walls and said, "You know what this means? It means you're not welcome. Get the hell out." This is what it just reminded me of.
That's funny, because actually, the funniest response I've gotten is, "But you're so nice. How can you be a Nazi?"
I think that's going to be one of the most valuable reactions that we can get. Right? It all comes down to being that good ambassador. You conduct yourself with certain standards, and when people hear the ideology, at first they're not even realizing they're hearing it, and then when it finally clicks, they're like, "But you're nothing like I was told," and that right there is the best propaganda ever. You are not acting like they were told the evil Nazis act.
I can really relate. Yeah, go ahead, Kathleen. Last time I stepped on you better right. Go ahead.
Well, we are all educators. And we get it whether we're remodeling our house or we're posting on our Substack channel like you are, Fashberg, or your channels, Monica and Salty. I want to make a statement about something that I'm probably a little alone on this, but when we use the words that have been given to us by the Jew, we dumb ourselves down. And so, you know, I don't even like using contractions. So if I'm going to say you are, I'll say you are, not your. I mean, it's just a, I don't know, it's a holdover from loving grammar, I think. Not liking spelling, but loving grammar. So I don't like the word app. I don't like the word normies. I don't like the word e-girl. I don't like the new formed words like alpha gal. I don't like the word behind the meter power islands or forward looking straight statement, because it excludes me, just like a corporation was created that had no human composition at all. It doesn't include us. It's soulless and godless. And so are these words, because what they do is they take the beauty of our language and they trash it. No longer is there any descriptive word. There's no, and I say this over and over again, there are no metaphors, there's no similes, there's no connection that is created. We are left with a word, and with that word, we have to create a definition, and we have to fill that out like a form. And that's what the Jew gives us. And it dumbs us down in the meantime. And then, so that's my rant on that. But I did want to share from my American Dictionary of English Language, the Noah Webster 1828, the definition of propagandist. I thought this was incredible. It says, propagandist, a person who devotes himself to the spread of any system of principles. So principles, we're principled people. So and then it goes on to it's from the word propagate, right? So it's to continue or multiply the kind of generation or successive production, to spread, to extend, to impel, to spread from person to person, to carry from place to place, to extend, to increase, to generate, to produce. So there's something very additive about the word propaganda. It's about increasing. It's not about decreasing, which is what the Jew does with the vocabulary. So they're constantly wanting us to decrease our own use and knowledge of our vocabulary. And they use propaganda and they twist it to turn it into an unprincipled verb. And so we are the educators, and it's our responsibility, I think, to enlighten people as to what the real word meanings are, like the word fascist. I mean, people don't even know what fascism is, and they don't realize that they're spitting on it and spewing and urinating on it and defecating on it. And in fact, it should be something to glorify. So, yeah, my spew.
Fantastic. Not only do they give us these soulless, mindless new vocabularies, but they try to forbid us from using the words that we want to use. Because Exactly. Every week there's a new politically incorrect thing, right? Yeah. So that people are scrambled and they are fearful of speaking the wrong word, and so they stop. They just stop, right? And through language, we are thinking and expressing and whatnot, communicating with each other. So, yeah, that was a really good little rant that you did.
Thank you.
And, yeah, just to add to that, yeah, they give us this nonsense stuff, but at the same time as trying to stop us from actually using the words that we want to use. Yeah. Or they steal the meaning of beautiful things. Like, how did they take something so beautiful and a symbol of hope like the rainbow and turn it into a symbol of something that is satanic, literally?
Mm-hmm. Well, they
and
did
I
it
could
with
name
ease
a mil- a th- many 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 more concepts like that. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Well, no, they did it with ease. All they did was they own the airways, and so and they own the media, and they own the politicians, and they own they own the banks. So I mean, not that any of this is new, but yes, exactly, Monica. And so they take everything that we hold sacredly and they trash it. They do more than trash it. They strip it limb for limb. They are soulless in how they work to take the spirit and the soul out of everything that we embrace. And they do it with glee, what I can see.
If I could jump in real quick, just because it speaks to that point, and I will forget. Shlomo88 over in our 88 chat said, propaganda relies on relating with the intended recipients, ergo we need to adapt and adopt their linguistic intricacies to be effective. Otherwise, we cannot affect things or people. So there is that component too. How much do you think that weighs in? Like, not necessarily in dumbing down our language, but adjusting how we are speaking. Let's face it, not everybody is educated past a certain point. They're not, if we use words they're not understanding, is the message going to get through?
Well, I think that was one of Goebbels' top rules, is it needs to be understood by as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. So you make the message simple. It's got to be true, but make it simple. To get the most people to understand it. And I also wanted to go back to, as far as our language, I feel that they are pandering to the lowest common denominator when they bring in these third worlders who can't speak our language. So they are tweaking it every day by erasing words from the dictionary and putting in new words that that one finna. F-I-N-N-A. I'm finna do this. I'm finna do that. It's like, that's not a real word. But you'll eventually see it in the dictionary mm-hmm. as they're kicking out more words from there.
That one an axe you something.
Yes.
Ultimately, I wouldn't worry too much about all these little things because just white people speaking clearly, white people will understand them. And I don't really care if non-whites understand us or not. It's we just need to the access to their ears. Mm-hmm. And you talk to them just in your normal voice, and they will understand you because we're white. The Jew is foreign. They've had to be trained to grasp their concepts. Or I think a lot of people, you see this particularly in sort of the nouveau riche, the upper class, you know, they got money, but they aren't deep thinkers. They just accept the Jew narratives because they think it has prestige. It's not that they even understand it. But even those people, I think if you talk to them in just clear language, they'll get it to the degree they want to. Once they start seeing that those narratives that they've adopted are going to destroy them, they'll change.
Well, and if we're communicating with words like, if we're communicating with the Jew words and they don't understand those, then we can't communicate with them. So if we, I'm in agreement with what you're saying, Fashberg and Huntress, and you know that if we must communicate, and our vocabulary, as long as we don't completely abandon it, it's our tool, right? It's our tool to be able to have relationship with another man or woman or child. It's our words, and our words are you know, they paint pictures. We create pictures with our words. If we lose that skill, if we lose that beauty, mm-hmm. then we've lost our ability to communicate. All we are doing is parroting a narrative that is given to us, and then we become the mouthpiece for the Jew.
Yeah, and as Fashberg was pointing out, that Mildred Miller's, she was effective because she spoke our plain language. She spoke to Americans. And I mean, she was sent to prison not because she failed, but because she was effective. If she hadn't been effective, you know, she would have been left alone. But she was a danger to the New World Order. And that's why they locked her up, even after Hitler had lost.
Yeah. There is a certain sense, and we saw it with Mildred, and I've seen it obviously not in the context of our struggle, what we're going through, but just everyday work life. I've had more people go, well, hey, let me follow you. It's that whole adage, follow them, they speak in sentences. When we present ourselves in an educated manner, speaking in an educated fashion, it lends a certain level of seriousness that impresses people on a visceral level. That was it. That was my whole point.
Oh, I mean, would you rather pay attention to somebody who is not setting an example, or would you rather be listening to someone who sets an example, exposes a higher bar? Personally, I've always wanted to ski behind the best skier on the mountain, or listen to someone who's extremely intelligent so that my own vocabulary increases. I would listen to the best violist or violin player, or, you know, I always want that because I want to learn, I want to grow. And I think that's probably fundamental to most people, wouldn't you think?
I will admit it surprises me how often I run into this effect, because the environment I was raised in, that's just you spoke a certain way, you act. I grew up in a bubble, more or less, which was great in some ways, but kind of left me shell-shocked once I got into adulthood. So I act in a certain way, and it shocks me when people around me go, oh, like they see it as something like so up here. And I'm like, isn't this just every day for everybody? And even now at 42 years old, I still have that knee-jerk reaction sometimes. I do. I catch myself dumbing down my language a lot, which bothers me more and more as I get older. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. It's hard to keep up with that. And I don't even know where I'm going with this. So somebody else take over, please. I'm sounding like an idiot.
No, I think for me, to hear someone speak eloquently and know they're keeping themselves in shape, it just means they respect themselves. And if they respect themselves, then they could respect me and other people. And much like Kathleen said too, I'm all about learning. Uh-huh. So if this person is well put together, there's a big chance they know something I don't, or about some topics I'm unsure of. And they'd be the ones I want to hang out with.
Yeah, how we put ourselves together. You know, it didn't just happen organically that people started going downtown in their sweatpants and then just, you know, just looking like they just got out of bed. They're wearing clothes that looks like they're pajamas or whatever downtown. That didn't just happen organically. That was done purposefully by the fashion houses. And guess who runs the fashion houses?
Do they have really big noses and really small hats?
Oh, maybe. So, yeah, it's a matter of self-respect and portraying that you have that about yourself, but that you... It's respecting other people too, that you present that you're respecting them too by showing up in decent attire, shall we say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's even deeper than just the superficial fashion. And you're really hitting on something that I've been mulling about a lot since I've been in Mississippi, because as everyone knows, there's a huge drug and alcohol problem here. And a lot of crime. And I'm like talking to these people and trying to figure out how did they get that way? What happened to them? And the conclusion I have at this point is that they're in a lot of mental pain and they're seeking some relief. I mean, I didn't grow up that way thinking, oh, my brain hurts. I need some, you know, need to take a drug or something to feel better. But that is what's going on here. And I think in the South, especially, these people have been so beaten down. You know, Spy Hunter sometimes says that, well, you know, actually, it's easier to be a Nazi than to be a rebel. That in this country, that has been just defined as the lowest class you can possibly be, right? And that, so it is important that we try to help these people just simply feel good about themselves, have self-esteem, have self-respect, know who they are. That, you know, I don't, I've had so many people here tell me, oh yeah, I'm part Cherokee. Well, we learned with Elizabeth Warren and others that most of the time that isn't true, right? But that's the identity they're looking for because they don't get trashed for it. Mm-hmm. Or they'll say they're Irish, and most of the time they're not. They're Scots-Irish, right? It's just, and they're afraid to talk about being white and heritage American. And that needs to change. These people are just going to die a horrible death. You know, they're already suffering. And so, I mean, I even tear up a little bit because it's been so much in my face the last few months of what these people are going through. And my heart just really goes out to them.
You make some excellent points, Huntress.
Excellent. Everybody send Huntress digital hugs right now. I think she needs them. We love you, Huntress.
To know who we are, and you made a point there at all that when people want to boast about being, you know, 1/8 Cherokee or something, and why is that that they want that part? Because those people are being raised up and sort of their, you know, wonderful narrative being pumped up, whereas ours is being, you know, absolutely trashed. Our heritage and our people are being trashed. So yeah, they want to, if there's 1/8 of something that's not being trashed, they want to be that. But something that my brother, I always think of this story that he encountered several young people who had been doing a lot of vices, like maybe they were just drinking all the time or really just gonzoed out on drugs all the time, whatever. And then when they learned what's really the truth about their history, this is over in Germany because my brother's been living in Germany for decades. But anyway, when these people learned the truth about their history, he knows several of these young men who just suddenly they cleaned up their life and suddenly they had a purpose and they joined in our struggle on, you know, the right side of history here. And it's like suddenly they just cleaned up. So I think some of the problem with the, you know, addictions and whatnot is because people are just, well, first of all, especially men, boys, they're just being shat upon from, you know, first day of grade one, that they're the worst thing going. No wonder they succumb to vices and addictions and whatnot. And then when they find out the truth and then learn about who they really are and about their ancestors, you know, being great warriors and whatnot, suddenly they have purpose in life and another reason to be, you know, educating our people who we are, who we are.
I fully agree, Monica. I think, well, under National Socialism, everyone did their part. Whether you were a street sweeper or you were a leader of one of the industrial committees, everyone had their part. Mm-hmm. Now, not so much. We at least had the purpose of, you know, being a mother, being a husband, being a father. But they've broken the nuclear family so much that we don't even have just the basics of, you know, of that feeling of being a mother, purpose. Your purpose is to have your children and take care of them, or a man, your purpose is to protect and to provide. So we've lost even basic purposes, and it's heartbreaking because, yes, if you have no purpose, there is no reason for you to get up at a certain time to stay sober or clean, or to care what everyone thinks, because no one would miss you, you know, if anything were to happen.
Yeah, and I think it's a sign that we are correct, that our heritage is important, because here what I see is it's intergenerational. It's not just, oh, this kid screwed up when he was young. No, his father did. His grandfather did. The kids here are living with very screwed up families, right? Now, to a certain extent, that's going to be the South because they're rebels. You know, they're just always going to kind of buck the system, and I admire them for it. But they're making some poor choices about how to do that. And so I think it's really important that they start learning their broader heritage, because maybe they don't have a father or a grandfather to look up to. But you know what? They've got some great, great, great grandfathers they sure can look up to. Let them have that. And that is the thing that has been stolen from these people more than anything, is that they're being told that your people were always bad. And that's just soul destroying.
Oh, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, I use the phrase because it's convenient, And I know Kathleen's probably going to shake her finger at me there and tell me to be more precise. Yes, Mom. But I hate the phrase white people. We used to be proud Italian Americans, German Americans. We were proud of our heritage, that very thing you're talking about. When did this happen where we all got squeezed into this one bland little box of what we're just white people? We don't season our food. We have no culture. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. They stole our very cultural names from us, stripped us of those cultural examples, and it's infuriating. I grew up being taught that it was embarrassing to be German American.
Well, they have to take it away from you so that you can't say, "But I come from this country. This country is my people's country." If they just call you white. Mm-hmm. It's different than calling you Japanese or Chinese or Israeli, because you know they're taking away your heritage so that you can't go and claim what is rightfully yours. At least that's what I believe.
Well, I think it's great what you're talking about, and I think it's fantastic. We reclaim the very words we've been taught not to use. We don't refer to us as white people. We refer to ourselves as German or Scottish or Celtic or whatever it is. We refer to that, and we have that conversation about our ethnicity. I mean, what's more powerful than being able to look them in the eye and use our words rather than the narrow box that contains the little words that they've given us? And, you know, I want to go back to what you've been talking about purpose, both Fashberg and Monica. You know, I listened to a woman named Frances Moore LaPay. I had just moved to New Mexico. It was 1998. That was 28 years ago. And she was at a certified organic food conference, and she was the guest speaker. She had in 1977 published her thesis, and it became one of the best sellers. It was called Diet for a Small Planet. And she took the corporations to task because they were claiming in the 1970s that we didn't have enough food to feed the huge population. Which is why my generation, so I was born in the early 50s, my generation had very few children. Many of us didn't have any because we were hearing it on the radio, we were hearing it in the newspaper, we were hearing it on television that we had too many people. And so she went on to say that no, we can actually not use NPK. We can actually use fertilizers that are not synthetic. We can grow foods that are not commercially grown. We can grow them without herbicides and pesticides, and we can produce ample amount of food for everyone worldwide. And she went ahead through her book to prove that very thesis. And it's a fantastic book for anyone who hasn't looked at it. I highly recommend it. But she spoke about corporations and how we were harmed so dramatically, and that if you think about every man's dream, every man's purpose, and the corporation was the first biggest tool other than abject slavery to destroy man's dream, because all of a sudden, you know, with industrialization and forced into these commercial environments, their dream was squished, right? They could no longer be that entrepreneur that they wanted to be. And who happened to be standing in the sidelines, doling out the drugs and the alcohol and the pornography and the strip joints and the gambling? I mean, who were the, what did you say? Small hats and long noses?
Big nose, tiny hat.
Yeah. I mean, it was them. And throughout history, they have been the ones controlling those addictive substances. And so when you don't have your dream fulfilled, it doesn't mean that you don't still have that desire. So you take these various addictive substances and it can create that desire within you. That's why drugs have been so prevalent. That's why alcohol makes you feel strong and it makes you feel invincible, and drugs can create a sense of euphoria. And all of those things can be achieved through accessing your purpose, through music, through art, through gardening, through farming, through writing, all these beautiful things that we can get, all these incredibly fine experiences from, without having to go to toxic substances. And so that's why so many of our men have fallen, from what I have read, and it certainly seems to be from the people that I know, and they remain addicted because they can't achieve their purpose, because quite literally it's been stolen. And so to wake up to that, to become aware of who brought that upon us, it's like what you were saying, I'm not sure, I think it was Huntress, that those German men who became aware of what was happening, and then they changed fundamentally, and they refused those assaults. And that's what all of us can do. We wake up. That's what education does. When we become aware of who the assailant is, all of the lies, then our most power that we have is to refuse that enslavement and to become the very best, the fullest, the most phenomenal man or woman that we can be. And so we bifurcate from that very narrow, constricting, harmful pathway that they want us to follow.
I think it was Fashbird talking about the German men, but I did want to pipe up and say, I'm absolutely fine with being called white. That's who I am. I'm such a mix of European heritages. I mean, just about, if I go back far enough, it's just like every country in Europe, and particularly Western Europe, that's my heritage. And like almost every group of colonialists are my ancestors. So white is a perfectly good term to me. It's the one that Americans have used for ourselves for a long, long time. And I do think that we need to be American white nationalists, that's our ethnic identity is American, American white. And if you go too much for your European heritage, then it's like, well, then why are you here? Are you part of our story, or are you part of Europe? Because we are different places and with different histories. Even though we're all white people and we all should support each other, be proud just to be a white American. It's good.
I'm not saying I'm not proud. I just hate how it's. Sometimes it feels like we're only identified as white in contrast to black people. And I don't like defining myself in relation to them at all, if I can avoid it. So it's not like it bothers me. Hi.
Sorry. Every time. Well, I'm so sorry.
Unfortunately, blacks exist. Black Americans exist. Okay. So I don't really care about what they say about us, but I am concerned about how we feel about ourselves, that our identity is a good one, and we should celebrate it, because the young people here really, really need it. They need us to be proud of who they are, just ethnically,
The way I see it is that when we're talking about being white, we're talking racial. Mm-hmm. And so we could still, you know, if your ancestors come from a certain country in Europe, we can be proud of that too. So I'm a German Canadian, and because I'm first generation, you know, it's my parents came directly from Germany to Canada. So I'm a German Canadian first, I think they call it first generation. I don't know. Do they call my parents first generation and me second generation? I've always been confused about that. But I think when we refer to ourselves as white, we're speaking of our race. Now, I have a friend who came to Canada from Denmark in the early 2000s with her young family, and they left Denmark because they saw what was going on there, and they wanted to leave, you know, as it was getting very bad there. Then they come to Canada and discover it's even more communist here. But anyway, they're wonderful people, and she has talked to me about using that word white, and I'll tell you what her concern is. And so when I use the word white, I'll also expand on that and say people of European ancestry, or I'll say the Caucasian race or the Aryan race. Aryan, it is a very, I love that word. I think that's a beautiful thing, you know, to describe who we are, our racial background. The reason she says that we need to be careful about the term white is for those other people who they hear us talking about whites and whatnot, and then they hear us talking about the Jews, and they say, well, aren't Jews white? And of course, we answer, no, they're not. But for the Browns out there, the Jews look white, and they do look white, a lot of them. A lot of them have miscegenated with our ancestors so much to the point that there's a lot of Jews who look very much like us. Blonde even, and blue-eyed, some of them. And, you know, it depends where their host was, that they would mix with the host and then start to look like the host so that they could be hiding in, you know, among, be the parasite all the better among their host. But anyway, so I think it's good to, we need to be proud to be white and get our children and the young people be proud of being white rather than ashamed, because the term white has been used against us by people like Noel Ignatieff, the Harvard Jew, you know, said, oh, this thing known as whiteness must be destroyed. And he couldn't imagine that anybody would object to that. Only a white supremacist would object to the extinction of this thing called whiteness, you know. So anyway, we have to counter that by being proud of being white, but we have to kind of also expand on that and use some of these other terms like Caucasian, Aryan, of European descent, to clarify that the Jews are separate from us. They are not white. And it's not us that get mixed up about this, but it's all these other people that might be part of the conversation too. I don't know. That's just, I'm just throwing it out there, just thoughts. Well, and what do you think?
Let me step in here for a second, sorry. There's this thing about the white race. Now, is that just as much of a dichotomy as an American citizen? If you truly look at what the words mean from a, you know, like a citizen is someone who's part of the corporate structure of America. And you have basically signed the birth certificate. You have registered your child. You have become a corporate straw man for the system. So American citizen is a dichotomy of words. And perhaps white race is as well, that it has been put together not by us, but perhaps by the Jew. So what you're saying, Monica, to use the word Aryan and to use alternatives. And I just wanted to define race, because it's very much like what you were saying. Generation, a family of descendants, a race of youthful and unhandled colts, a particular breed as a race of mules, a race of horses, a race of sheep, or of such a race, no matter who is king. So there are many ways of looking at that. Yes, go ahead, Huntress.
Yeah, I would say that white is the appropriate term for Americans specifically, because it's the term that our ancestors were just using to describe themselves as they lived in this land with Indians and blacks and, you know, the other races that were here. But Aryan would be great to define us as a race. You know, ethnically, I'm white. Aryan is a wonderful one to define us as a race because it goes back to our deep heritage, back to the Bronze Age. I'm going to get it in there. Anyhow, but this thing about are the Jews white, this is, I'm still working it out, trying to go through the genetics and understand what happened. But what it looks to me like is a very large portion of Jewish ancestry in the deep past was white. The mongrelization has come later because they were so involved in the slave trade. I mean, Jews are now up about 3% African in heritage on average. That's pretty high. Middle Easterners in general are now 5%. That was not the case, you know, 4,000 years ago. Now, there is, I'm still trying to figure out, like, the origins specifically of Semitic-speaking people. They did separate from us quite a while ago. So, you know, whether they were white or not is questionable. But my gut instinct is yes, that Caucasians all originate in this one area by the Caucasus Mountains between the Black Sea and the Caspian. All of the DNA markers, the haplogroups, were in that area at the end of the last ice age and all put together. Yeah, are you leaving? I'm sorry. Sorry. a worker was leaving the house. He didn't realize I was still online. Anyhow, so let's revisit that, but I wouldn't exactly say that Jewish heritage was that the reason they look white is because of recent mixing with us. Although that is true, they have recently mixed with us, but that they were this group of people who were in the Middle East and mongrelized primarily because of their involvement in the slave trade.
There's also people who feel that they are descendants of Neanderthals. So there's quite a strong case to be made for that, too.
Well, we are descended from Neanderthals.
I don't think
all
so.
All white, no. Yes.
Cro-Magnon.
Yes, we're all, well, so Cro-Magnon, yes. But we also have, all white people are up to 2% Neanderthal. My personal is 1.75. I'm fairly high on Neanderthal. So, yes, we are part Neanderthal. Actually, the group that did not have Neanderthal is this, they're in the E haplogroups, and they were North Africa and into the Western Levant. The Natufians, they never mixed with Neanderthals. And Middle Easterners of the Levant, such as Jews, you know, the ancient Hebrew speakers, they were Natufians. So they actually have less, except for their recent interbreeding with us. But yeah, no, we have Neanderthal, and there's nothing wrong with that. It might actually be that's why we have light skin and light eyes and a wide variety of hair colors is from them, even though it's, you know, 2% or less. There's no, the whole idea that, oh, they were primitive people and stuff like that. No, they were Europeans living in a difficult environment and succeeding. So I don't have any shame in being Neanderthal.
Well, and there's another perspective, too, to throw in with what Monica brought in, and that is there's a book called Political Ponderology, and I don't know how to pronounce the man's name, the author's name, but he writes about the Jew, and he writes about the fact that they have a different chromosomes, different DNA, that in fact, that's the only reason that they could behave in the way that they behave. That they are not the same as you and I are, and that sets them apart. So as a different race, whether they, you know, whatever color they are referred to, but that they actually have a different genetic makeup, and that is what they're continuing to try to do to humanity, is to change our genetic makeup, to destroy our genetic makeup. And with that, you know, they're lacking in empathy. They're lacking in the capacity to create. They're lacking in the capacities that they so sorely desire to be able to have, from what I have read. But we are the very ones who create such high principled cultures, and they do not. So they're not even... They're not like us. Whether they have white skin, blue eyes, blonde hair, or black hair, or whatever, it's not even in some ways. It's not apples and apples. And they, when they came into this world, they were not human in the way that we are human. And that give us our principles and our capacity to be honorable, our capacity for compassion and love and to care. It's like Mildred said that the Germans embraced her when she went to Germany. They embraced her because they wanted other people to see what kind of culture the German people were. They were people who... helped one another. So someone who had less, they shared with them. They helped in various jobs. You know, I probably could find a plumber down the road who would come and help me, and I wouldn't have to struggle with my own dyslexia trying to figure out which is, you know, lefty loosey, righty, you know, tidy, you know, that kind of crap that just does me in. So
well. Two things I would say about that is that Jews definitely help each other. They just don't help us. But they do help each other.
Yes.
And they have not always existed. There were no Jews until maybe the Persian period is when you start having that identity of Jew. When the province of Yehud was created. But, you know, we've got basically the mythology of the origin of the Hebrews. It actually looks like they were formed from this group of people in the Bronze Age who were called the Hepiru. And they were like the rejects of every group. They were criminals. Highway robbery was a big way they made their living. The Hepiru were a very hated people. And that seems to be their origin. But they were not ethnically one group. They were, like I said, the rejects from every of the culture. It was formed as a mafia, basically. You know, and... Yes, they have taken on genetic characteristics since then because of their, you know, the continuation of this culture and interbreeding, and, you know, it's affected their genetics. But so it's not like Jews have not always existed. There's always been people who had Jewish characteristics, you know, the things that we identify with Jews in negatively, you know, criminality and such. But that being said, it's I think you have to be rational in understanding their origin, that they are a mixed people. They're not, they go through these periods of intense inbreeding, but they also go through periods of a lot of outbreeding. That's how they have boosted their numbers, mostly by polygamy. And, you know, having children with slaves and raising them as Jews. That has been a strategy of theirs for a long, long time. So, yeah, I kind of reject when people start describing Jews as like something supernatural almost, you know? They're not. They're just crappy people. And they've got this mafia thing going on that needs to be defeated.
Well, that's part of the mythos. I think part of their propaganda. They build themselves up into this mythological seeming unbeatable force, you know, that, oh, you can't possibly go again. But at the same time, they're also the poor eternal victims, and we're only 2% of the world's population. And it all ties back to that propaganda. You know, they've built themselves up in this way as the ultimate boogeyman and the ultimate villain at the same time.
That's a little bit like the Iron Dome that was unbeatable to protect Israel, and then Hamas managed to come in by opening the gates, and then that was the excuse to then go and level Gaza. You know, I mean, yes, it's the constant confusion. Even Henry Ford, in his writings for his newspaper, was giving quotes, and one newspaper man would call them a race, and a rabbi would call it a religion. And it was like, keep everyone guessing. Never, you know, never allow anyone to clearly understand so that they can always, you know, like you say, claim the victim. And it's ongoing.
What I'll say about this, and then I've got to go. I've got somebody coming here in a few minutes. But, yeah. Well, Gilad Atzman, Jew himself, wrote about how they shape-shift according to what is convenient, the Jews themselves. So this is not how we are describing them. This is how they will describe themselves. They'll either be a race if it's convenient to be a race, or they'll be an ethnic group, or if it's convenient to be that, or they'll be a religious group if that's more convenient to take on that identity, or they'll be a political entity if that's the most convenient, according to what, I mean, I might be paraphrasing, I am paraphrasing, that's why I might not have it exactly right, but basically they, according to their own, how they define themselves, that they shapeshift according to what is most convenient for their own power structure. Now, my own take on it is this. What I do know, or I think I know to be true, is that we are in an epic spiritual struggle. It's a struggle between good and evil. And I truly believe that this group of people who identify as Jewish now, they are God's chosen people, just like they always taught us in school. But who is their God? Their God is Lucifer. They are Satanists. Everything that they represent, everything they do, is basically following satanic instruction, you might say, guidance from Satan. It's a spiritual struggle we are in. So the struggle between good and evil, and they are on the wrong side of that.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. I was talking with a friend today about the inner voice. He was saying that, oh, yeah, I've been told I'm autistic. And I said, oh, you mean you have that voice in your head that you talk to that you just, you know, zone out and you're not in tune with what's going on around you? It's your brain. You're talking with your brain. I said, that's not autism. That's just having an inner voice and being white and having some intelligence, you know, then we're talking about, but who is directing that voice in your head? And it can be like Jesus or a positive voice in your head, or it can be evil. And that's where people go wrong, is when they're following the evil voice. And Jews have formed a culture in which they glorify taking advantage of people, of promoting their race, their group, their mafia. I still think mafia is the best definition, or organized crime, which has an ethnic component to it, right?
Sister Tess is in the 88 chat, and she was feeling a little salty about the mafia. I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I understand that there is a sort of a positive aspect of a mafia. You know, they protect their own. But when it's a mafia that doesn't include you, it's bad, right?
They have an in-group preference, definitely.
Right, in-group preference. And so, yeah, they do follow Satan in that sense, in our understanding of Satan. But anyhow, and they are intelligent enough to have an inner voice.
Frighteningly, yes. All right. Well, Monica, I know you got to scoot. You want to give us any final thoughts or just shout out? I know I do have your channels all linked below, but if there's anything else you want to shout out.
No, this has been most interesting. And I think that this discussion could be really, you know, a theme for another day. Like, you know, who are the Jews? And then the racial thing that we talked about earlier, like,
yeah,
our own, how
race
we
versus
identify.
Ethnicity, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's absolutely. That's been most interesting. It's been a pleasure to be on this panel with all of you, and glad you're feeling better, Fashbird and Huntress. Your perspectives are, like, in some cases I have to say bang on. In other cases, it would be really good material for a great further discussion. So I look forward to, you know, being on further panels with you, but. Yeah, there were a lot of really interesting ideas, and good to see you, Kathleen, and Salty, always. So it's been my pleasure.
All right. We'll see you next time, Monica. Have a good one.
Thank you, Monica.
Always good to talk to Monica. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. We are going to get ready to wrap up, though, ladies. So we'll do a final round of final thoughts and then do all our shout outs and hit the outro. So why don't we start with Fashbird?
I'd say keep pushing the propaganda, pushing the truth. They can't stop us all, and we'll just keep coming back. And white power.
White power. Milady Huntress.
Yeah, I don't disagree with people to be salty or to put them down. It's just, I mean, very often they're saying things that I thought in the past. It's just I'm dealing with a lot of new information right now and going, hey, this is actually a better description or more interesting than what we previously thought. So, yeah, white power. I love this show. We have a lot of fun. And, I look forward to next time, and pretty soon we're going to, we've changed plans on what our new streams, the first stream's going to be, because we're going to have visitors, our friends that we know from our FTJ community, and I'll leave it a surprise for now, because they will be on stream with us with our first stream.
That's
cool.
Excellent. All right, Mama Cat. Final words.
Well, it is. It's always an amazing experience and opportunity to be on your show with you. And Fashbird, what you do and all that you bring forward for all of us with your archival work is really tremendous. Huntress, I don't know you too well, but I'm learning constantly, and I'm somewhat in awe of all of what I don't know. And so it just gives me more juice to learn more. So I thank you for that. And Salty, you know, just don't ever be less than whom you are. Don't ever let anyone tell you to dumb that incredible brain down because they don't understand you. You know, it's we all have to stand tall. And like Monica says, you know, this is a spiritual battle. And I really see this as each one of us has to eclipse all of the roadblocks. We have to go beyond. We have to understand ourselves so deeply so that we can no longer be afraid, where we have greater strength. Our courage is amplified with each day. Our anything that holds us back in terms of any addictions, we overcome, because the Jew wants to hold us back through those methods. They want to poison us every single day. They want us to be enslaved by drugs, by food, by anything that takes from us. And it takes our vitality. It takes our vision. It takes our creativity. And we can't allow that, because that is part of that spiritual battle. Because when we reclaim our entire self, then we are the full victor. And I just refuse to give them any victory. I just refuse. So, and I'm not slave material anyway, and I haven't been since birth. So, yeah. Well, thank you, ladies. It's been a real delight. And thank you, Salty.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, all of you. You ladies honor me. You humble me. It is such a great privilege to have each and every one of you part of this group. It honestly, I don't have the words for it. I really don't. I value each and every one of you. So before I actually, you know, get teary-eyed and sappy, I'm going to do my shout-outs to everyone, and then I will hit the outro. If you ladies want to stick around for a few minutes and chat, you can. If you got to move on, that's cool too. So let's hit the lists here. Over on 88, we had Bitch of Buchenwald, Sister Klasha, Joseph D, Just Ignore Me, Kermi, Moondog 76, Red 88, Shlomo 88, Tango Alpha Vector, Teresa Walsh popping in. I think I got just about everybody over there. And we did actually have Joseph, Kermi, and Aried Eagle all popping in on BitChute. That was cool. That's new. BitChute's new. We're trying it out. It's going well. Also, anyone listening along on Crewbot, good to have you here with us. Pun fully intended. Get it here. Ha ha. No, I won't give up my day job for a comedy career. All right. Over on 88, couple of special shout outs to Enward Snowman, who gave a dono and said, / Klaxon SS. Also, Donut, thank you for the show. And hail to all the lovely and thoughtful ladies of FTJ Media. And Thomas E. Dwyer, great show, Salty and Panel, 070/. Burn Before Reading, Heil Ladies, /. And Kermi says, @ Kathleen Dudley, super kind words that meant a lot. Alrighty. And we had hanging out with us a big group over here. So we had Joseph, Miss Hitler, Bushmaster 6A, Shameless Wise Ass, Aquarius Fab LLC, Edward Snowman, Red Fred, Teuton Fritz, Ethno Nationalist, Aryan Eagle, Burn Before Reading, Uncle Stevel, it just jumped, oh no, I lost my place. Straight Out of Swampton, Veil of Shadows, good to see you. Kermi, Jewfinder General, of course, the Hunter of Spies, Spy Hunter himself. I think I got everybody. So as ever, it was fantastic to have everybody here. Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. Tomorrow night, we do have Ash and Ether, and we're doing the show on summer solstice. So we'll be going over that, the usual times, the usual places. Everybody have a white power night, and hail victory.
White power. We'll be right back.
Kathleen brings words of wit and charm. Salty brings tales from the rain and storm. We lean in close, we share the chair. Five voices fill the evening air. Hear that little sparkle fly from one good heart to the other. Through the wire we found a way to sing to every sister, every mother.
WPWH.
Ladies of the air, powers wide as their smile.
WPWH.
Ladies. Recites from the history books. Bashbird laughs soft at the hook-nosed crooks. Monica shares her brother's tales and speaks truth for people everywhere. When the red light starts to glow, we know our little world can show. On the windowsill, faint brass band through rain and chill. One by one we pass the news, then we pass the joy anew. From our table to your town, let the whole white darkness soften down.
W-P-W-H.
Ladies.